Okay, our next speaker is Dr. Beverly Butler. Beverly is Director of the MA in Cultural Heritage at UCL and a Senior Lecturer in Cultural Memory Studies. Her research focuses mainly in the Middle East, engaging in ethnographies of cultural heritage projects in Alexandria, Jerusalem and the West Bank. This afternoon, Beverly will be talking on heritage fevers, archival terms and just futures from Alexandria to Jerusalem.
Thank you very much, and thank you to the organisers as well for inviting me here. So I want to talk about something that I've coined as heritage fevers. And I think mine, to some extent, is a tale that people will be familiar with in other particular humanities or social science disciplines, that we have gone through what they call the archival turn. So whether it's reading Derrida or your book, people have, you know, kind of looked at the discussions there and found it relevant, significant, influential for their own domain, and that's what I want to talk about today. So I want to look at this, particularly the idea that when we're talking about heritage, and this was something that was underlined by Derrida, is that it's the future that is at stake. Nobody would want to claim a past without a strategic idea, the instrumentalist idea that there was something about the future they wanted to claim as well, and their presence in the future, and more than that, the idea of a just future, a future where their self group, you know, was seen to flourish. So I'm going to go on a quest with you to Alexandria and Jerusalem and to talk about this, because my first, my first project was about the Alexandria Library. And Rappaport, in his later Derrida book, talks about the Alexandrina, the library or the mausoleum, the domicile of the muses, as the paradigmatic example of archive fever. So I was already studying this. I was studying it not only because I was interested in the Western imagination's kind of romantic longing for this lost library that gets burned, the lost ancestor that's traumatically lost, but also that they were rebuilding it in Alexandria as a millennium project. So I was doing an ethnography of how people were feeling about that in Alexandria, as well as digging deep into the kind of the Western imagination. So again, the idea of, you know, why that magistrate or why that archon is very, you know, kind of important here. So very much I was looking at the Alexandrina as an object of nostalgia, loss and redemption. So while, you know, kind of Derrida was looking at the word arche, archon, I was looking at the etymology of the muses from Greece who then migrate to Alexandria following the footsteps of history, as it were, as it was argued, Western history, Greek history, in the footsteps of Alexander the Great, to this place, to sanctify this place. So you have these two quotes, and I think this quote from Derrida about to suffer from a sickness or an illness is to burn with a passion, and the idea about searching for the archive right where it slips away. So Alexandria fits into this nostalgia. It's almost a particularisation of this kind of idea of archive fever. It is to have a compulsive, repetitive and nostalgic desire for the archive, an irrepressible desire to return to the origin, a homesickness, a nostalgia, the return to the most archaic place of absolute commencement. So there were very many kind of crossovers with this, and again, what you have coined as origin fever, this idea, you know, to actually commune with origins, and the whole idea of the muses was about communing, you know, with the divine, and with the divine here you get knowledge as well, come into it. So Foucault as well had already had this kind of more kind of pleasurable idea of Alexandria as a myth of return and redemption. He talks about Alexandria as our birthplace, it's mapped out the circle of all Western language, to write was to return, to go back to the beginning and to grasp again the first instance and to witness anew the dawn. So it's renewal, it's regeneration. And it's through the idea of writing to return, the idea that there was the archive with these authentic texts in it. And this was really the idea of the Western imagination, Greek memory and Greek origin being kind of narrated here. So I was interested in if it was a kind of, you know, metaphor or a writerly, you know, idea, what was it literally like to return to Alexandria? And was that a good idea? Did people literally want to build this thing? And what would be the consequences? May I have the next slide? So also this idea of heritage fever, you have this return and redemptive kind of formula, which is underwritten, I would say, you know, the dominant idea of what heritage is. As we all see, UNESCO, the UN, you know, kind of agency that deals with culture and the World Heritage lists, have this idea that, you know, an anxiety kind of basis that things are going to decline, entropy is going to set in, we're going to lose everything, therefore we need to keep it. How do we keep memory? How do we keep, how do we preserve it? How do we guard it? And I think what the book in particular, Derrida's book, was important for is that he looked at the idea of the technicist aspects of this and also the metaphysical or messianic future aspects of this. So, you know, the idea of the archons and the idea that they were symptomatic of power and violence. It was about law, order, authenticity, which is a very important word for heritage as well. So the authentic books that were shipped from Greece or grabbed in the harbours at Alexandria were supposed to be the really important ones. And not only that, there was the idea of the first attempts to edit and fix texts, which people have written about as, you know, epistemological violence done onto the oral tradition of texts. Everything was fixed at Alexandria. You've got the archivists there. Nietzsche thought that this is, going back to your, what you've been mentioning as well, thought this was a slave economy. And he thought the Alexandrian library had all these, you know, kind of who gets the scrolls out the archive, who works in the archive. And he says once the slaves in the archive become aware of their condition, it's like a time bomb waiting to burn. So you get this idea of colonising desires, the death drive. Also the idea of collecting everything. The memory of the world is often what the Alexandrina is described of, this universal encyclopedic memory, and that could be done by the Hellenistic, you know, kind of actors here, the patriarchs, the philosophers here. There's only Hypatia who gets a bit of a mention as a girl. But again, it's that idea of a pure Greek origin and of memory, a real idea that we preserve memory as we go along. But then you get the kind of underside of this, which is the idea of the archive and as heritage as a synonym for home and origin. So you're building a secondary origin with the idea that actually you're in a diasporic condition. So this is the Greeks leaving Greece and all of the things that, you know, kind of should be there to transmit memory were no longer there. So the archive is always inauthentic. So you have that paradox all the way through. So this is a place where memory in exile is housed, and also this idea that it's the break between memory and myth and the coming of history, and this is how it is played out. And these are modern historians mostly who are looking back to this ancient ancestor, and you could say they were projecting rather on this idea of, you know, this kind of ancient archive, of which very little is actually known about, which helps if you want to mythologise and make a legendary ancestor. So this is the traumatic loss of an ancient ancestor. And even in the rhetoric that was said by Hosni Mubarak, who was then the president, no longer, of Egypt, and the people at the UN, UNESCO, they talked about, you know, the idea of, you know, the tears that were wept over all the things that were lost in Alexandria. And this was because of the fire, you know, the archive fever in its English version has got that, you know, the flame on it. So there is this idea of, you know, the self-destructive capacity of these colonising desires and the ultimate flammability. And Derrida talks about the Alexandria Library in Disseminations and talks about, you know, it was built with this consciousness of its own mortality. So there is this idea that the desire to keep things, but you know they're going to be lost. So it's an ultra, you know, kind of over-determined way in which you try and keep things. But also the idea that it's about just futures, it's about the self and the self group, trying to go towards the idea of keeping some aspect, you know, of identity together. And for Derrida, the other interesting thing that works in this kind of whole idea of the archive is that you always get traces of the other, you always get the hauntings of the other that you have tried to repress, you know, at the walls of the archive. Can I have the next one, please? So on the ruins, you get this idea, and particularly in Western modernity, that you build Alexandria again. So it becomes the blueprint, the paradigm for the modernity's new archival and heritage museum spaces. It's a kind of redemptive formula, a heritage revivalism. So there were discussions at the formation of the British Museum, also the Louvre, about the idea that this is going to be Alexandria, but this is going to be better. The Cabinets of Curiosity often took it as a model as well, but particularly these institutions. and the idea that we were going to collect, again, encyclopedic, the memory of the world, or the institution. And again, that's what a lot of projects on the internet claim to do, the idea, can we at last have the technology to, you know, kind of have this encyclopedic collection? And there is this interesting idea as well of Derrida also doing his invited speech. He was invited by UNESCO to give a lecture, which it was called Ethics, Institutions and the Right to Philosophy, where he described UNESCO itself as a philosophical act and an archive. So he did kind of, you know, give more in a sense of a broader idea of archival practices. And again, he says, you know, the quest for of heritage to date has been about the Greco-European memory, the Greek origin, and its, you know, kind of again colonising typologies of collecting, listing, appropriating, world heritage lists and colonising, which are very unfairly stacked towards the Western world. The idea that you have to have a monumental heritage, so sub-Saharan Africa, the Pacific, has always lost out in the idea of, you know, within a UNESCO schema, who is civilised, who has objects of culture. So he says again, amongst other things, they've displaced Egyptian, Jewish, Chinese, Arabic memory. And so he calls for the re-envision of UNESCO itself to better futures. And he does this with the idea that it has to go beyond nation state, because of course UNESCO is made up of nations, and that it has to be part of a democracy to come, as he calls it, and it has to take on the idea of the archive of the other. So, to cut a long story short, and you can buy a lovely book about it as well, very... I can't actually see that, but I wrote a book, I'll return to Alexandria about this, about both the Western imagination and the ethnography of how it was being taken on by contemporary Alexandrians. And it does have this idea of the revolutionary in it. When it first came, when the museum first came, it was seen as a foreign object, a Western object, the very modernist design. People said it looked like a spaceship that was crashed on the shores of the Mediterranean. The most destruction of heritage in Alexandria took place when they dug the foundations of this. They actually destroyed lots of things that they now wish could be in the museums, which are part of the insides. So it was labelled what not to do, heritage what not to do, and I've managed to collect all of these stories together. Many campaigns against what happened. Also at the same time, you've got underwater archaeology, almost like unbidden return. At the same time as this kind of Hellenistic icon was coming back, new technologies meant that underwater archaeologists could get to bits of Pharos, to Cleopatra's palace sites. So you've got this other kind of archive, although, as we know, Derrida thought there was something more authentic about archaeologists in terms of, you know, the gradiva, you know, kind of foot the impression, and I'll get back to that in a moment, but he thought, you know, archaeologists could get to a more authentic archive than the archive per se as an institution could. So I catalogue all of the disasters here and all of the campaigns which were about reappropriating it in the local. Unfortunately, when the plans were made for the Alexandrina, they neglected to put car parking space. And so there was a note from UNESCO saying, let's knock down the building next to it, which happened to be a maternity and a children's hospital. So all the Alexandrians saw was this, you know, hole in the floor, this kind of barrier across it, and then demolishing something that was needed. And so there was this idea that they actually kind of resisted all of this. And so it is very amazing that by the time, you know, we had the Arab Spring, there was actually this, what is now called the hands around the library kind of phenomena took place, where people actually defended this. And so there must have been some process, you know, of, you know, this being kind of domesticated in some way. And if you look at the website, you know, you can find out lots of ways in which people have reappropriated it. But I give the ugly story, as it were. I'm the memory person that nobody wants to remember. If the story of the beginnings of it that was quite violent, that was quite, you know, kind of difficult. So again, yeah, but if I can get just to Jerusalem, just to get quickly to Jerusalem while I've got time. I don't know if anybody knows about this whole phenomena of Jerusalem fever and Jerusalem syndrome, but that became my next fever to pursue. So this is going to Jerusalem, I think, and I was invited there, allows me to take on this messianic aspect of heritage, and you know, the kind of religious heritage that, you know, kind of in a sense is the second part of what Derrida does when he, you know, kind of gets into the idea of the Book of Books and the Philipson's Bible that Freud has, and to look at the idea of city as archive and trace, which is a very, you know, kind of something that people do now in that more kind of you know, dispersed way, disseminated way. So it's all again, if you know, kind of Derrida, I met Derrida through the idea of the archival turn, then this is the idea that, you know, the spiritual turn and the efficacies are now something that heritage is now taking on very much. How do we engage with the sacred? We used to be, you know, the kind of secular shrine, but how do we engage with that idea that most people in most parts of the world actually have, you know, again, wish divine communion when they go into the ideas of their heritage and inheritance. So the treasure of the archive, as Derrida says, was the Book of Books. So I was interested in this place that, you know, as Karen Armstrong said, you know, kind of, you know, that basically worked for the Abrahamic religions. It seemed to introduce them to the divine. And also the quote from Carolyn with the idea of, you know, the archive fear, the desire to recover moments of inception. And to find and possess all sorts of beginnings. And pilgrimage is about possessing. Not only the idea that you want to possess something, but it will possess you. And I quite like that idea of that kind of struggle between who possesses what. Can I have the next one? So there is this thing called the Jerusalem fever or the Jerusalem syndrome. And I read this in my, when I first set out 10 years ago to go to Jerusalem and got rather shocked by it. So this was the idea that increasing numbers of visitors going to Jerusalem experience episodes that were initially defined as a hysteria. Increasingly they were kind of psychopathologized as psychosis. The idea that it has 7 stages, 7 days. You can actually do it in a week, which is convenient as the idea of, you know, kind of breakdown goes. So you go through anxiety, agitation, nervousness on day one. Although I do that in every holiday, don't you? Desire to split away from group every holiday as well. Cleaning rituals, not so much. So the idea that people get upset about bathing, cutting their fingernails, toenails, and the idea that they adopt a white toga. And you actually get signs if people have been to Jerusalem in hotels saying if anybody has, you know, nicked the hotel linen, keep an eye on them because they may find them, you know, in the Via Dolorosa, saying that they are, you know, kind of Virgin Mary or Moses. So the idea that there's something happens, something quite extraordinary happens when people come to this place. So there's this idea that then people feel impelled to give a public recitation, psalms, verses or hymns, also feel compelled to go on a march to Jerusalem's holy places, often to say that they're actually inauthentic. It's not a kind of, you know, it's often a very kind of destructive act in a can be, the idea that we should, you know, get away from all these shrines and go forward to the future. So it's very much the idea of, you know, kind of a messianic vision people have. So the delivery of a redemptive sermon is the end game of this in a holy place. And the person then believes that they play a pivotal role here, whether they are a prophet, a messiah, or they adopt a particular religious persona with that. And the favourites are Samson, Moses, Christ, and the Virgin Mary. Now, apparently, gender-wise, women are always Virgin Mary in that way. So you get, this is, oh, can I have the next box then? This has appeared in the British Journal of Psychiatry. It's, you know, been pathologised to this extent. It's a matter of discussion. But it's about depersonalisation, the idea of going to a place and being either so overwhelmed or underwhelmed, and that's why on the other slide I compared it to the idea of the pharmacon and Derrida with Plato's pharmacy, the idea of the pharmaconic, you know, the place that you go to, is it poison or is it cure? How does it affect you? And the psychiatrists have said that this is a difference. The encounter here is between Jerusalem as an idealistic collective subconscious image and that comes into conflict with the reality of the modern city. So are you overwhelmed by this? Are you underwhelmed about what you see? Is, you know, the heritage of mind the place that you think Jerusalem should be? You know, do you need to then reconstruct that in reality, which many people do, particularly the Australian who tried to burn down the Dome of the Rock? You know, the idea of burning things that shouldn't be there in their own idea of it. So the idea of how well you bridge worlds is the idea of how you keep your health going. If you manage to keep the, you know, your subconscious image as well as taking on the, you know, basically the known and the unknown, then there is a chance that, you know, kind of you have some kind of, you know, healthy reaction to this. But there is this idea of psychotic decompensation and cognitive dissonance that is described as, and again, it's conflict between heritage as place and heritage as mind, which is interesting to think about. Do we actually, you know, is our heritage in our mind? Do we already have it? Or is it a place? And I work with refugees a lot, Palestinian refugees in Jordan. And, you know, their idea of Palestinianness is certainly, you know, one of the mind that then they make real and they make into place to some extent, you know, in a place like a refugee camp, which is a non-place. So you get the idea of, and people are aware of significant place syndromes. One of these is Freud on the Acropolis, when he goes into 1904 with his brother. He goes to the Acropolis and it's very much a place he wanted to go. He couldn't believe he's there and he can't understand why he goes into a deep depression. And so he's, you know, kind of trying to work out this, and it takes him years and years to work out and to analyse this kind of episode of the disturbance of memory of the Acropolis. And he says it's actually, by the time, you know, he goes through a lot of reasons why it could be, but one of his key ones is the idea that it's a successful wish fulfillment, and what's, you know, worse than not getting what you want is getting what you want, trying to deal with that. So there is this idea of, you know, surpassing the father, you know, who is now dead, the idea of, you know, when he was young, the idea of travel and escape from home was great, but now there was that idea that, you know, there was something, guilt was bound up in all of this. So there's that. There's things like the Stenhouse syndrome, which is people going to Florence and weeping over the art there and being overcome by it, and that was actually the thing to do, you know, to get hysterical, basically. You also have things like airport syndromes, travel syndromes, where people actually forget who they are in a lot of these structures that increasingly look the same. So people will go up to a desk and say, "This passport says Beverly Butler, I have no idea who she is, I don't have any affinity, I don't really know." And people say it could be, you know, the idea of time, you know, kind of, is it serotonin or the other one, levels? Is it the one that gets low when you're travelling?
Melatonin.
Melatonin levels, or the idea of time zones, but the idea of, you know, losing depersonalisation in some way. There's also the White House syndrome, where regularly, apparently, people go to the White House and demand either that they are the president or that they need to see the president so he can sort out, you know, a problem over a fence with a neighbour. And I think, actually, the first was how Bush got in. So the idea of communing with sacred heritage is obviously something that is, you know, really significant here. And of course, Freud didn't go to Jerusalem. It was one of those places that, you know, he had a problem with. He did all his identity work in, you know, kind of Rome and Greece, you know, and that kind of idea of situating himself. So in this letter to Zweig, where he says it's a, you know, strange, how strange this tragically mad land you have visited must have seemed to you. It never produced anything but religion, sacred frenzies, presumptuous attempts to overcome the outer world of appearances by means of the inner world of wishful thinking, and we hail from there. So this is the origin that Freud doesn't want to go back to in that sense, or that he avoids. But one of the things that, I'm summing up now, honest, one of the things that, so there's this desire in repression, should you actually go, and this wish fulfillment, and what if, you know, and what would you do there, would you, and I got a bit worried after reading this. I thought, what if I go there and I think I'm, you know, the Virgin Mary, and I have to phone UCL and tell them? would they dock my wages? Would that free up a lectureship? Who knows? you know me too well. Or my director. But also there's this idea of Palestinian archive fever. So Dumani has written about this idea of an archive fever that is sweeping through Palestinians, whether it's in, as he says, New York, London, Riyadh, or, you know, or Jordan. The idea of trying to, whether it's oral history, whether it's the keys to the home. So going back to the idea of the domicile and the home, collecting everything. And again, this idea of, you know, kind of having a sacred site. Well, Marina Warner, in her kind of quote on the Freud Museum, said, you know, that's a sacred place. People go to it. It's a place of mythic memory. It's a shrine. That's what we want to do. We want to be imaginative in these places. Now the next one. This is the last one. So there is this idea of, you know, kind of the scene of fevers. And Cuffershaw Mental Health Centre is where people are taken once they have Jerusalem fever or Jerusalem syndrome. There is this idea of, you know, the only thing you can do is keep people away, you know, section them, and then send them back on the next, flight from Tel Aviv. And, you know, thinking about this space as well, it's actually, built on the remains of Deir Yassin, which is the destroyed village, which has now become a centre point of the campaign for the Nakba that the Palestinian memory resides in. So this woman here is one of the people who goes annually on Nakba Day to actually, you know, kind of show all the Arabic villagers' names who were killed in this space. It's also the place that's near Yad Vashem Memorial. So this idea of many fevers and many memorials is something, again, that I think Derrida is really important. He talks about that right at the end. You know, there are many memories, many fevers that are about. So again, if heritage, just to sum up, is something about resource, you know, is a resource for self, making self and remaking self, world and future, it's often contested, it's often polarised, and as we can see on the TV at the moment with Gaza and Israel, you know, it's literally, you know, kind of people dying. And so there is the idea of heritage as legacy, the future. So, you know, you're thinking 20 years on, it's important. And there is a kind of Derridean theme there. The idea, you know, again, a pharmaconic of heritage being either burden or liberation or both at different points in time. And I think the Freud Museum, I just want to say, has been very fortunate and, is a brilliant place itself, deservedly so, to be part of the Just Futures articulated there, because not only have you had Derrida talk about, you know, the figure of Jerusalem in his work, and particularly the idea of Jerusalem as a city of refuge in that kind of, you know, messianic, you know, prophetic way, but also the idea of the archive of the other and taking on the archive of the other, just this space with these kind of three dynamics. But also, I was lucky enough to be at the Edward Said, kind of lecture, and he's lovely. he's not dead to me. No, nobody dies on my watch. I keep people alive. He's just somewhere else in the world. And so this idea that he had as well at the end of the lecture there about empathy between besieged identities, and his, you know, dialogue was about, you know, kind of Jewish, you know, and Palestinian identities have gone through this idea of being besieged, and the idea that, you know, empathy is something that we should aspire to. Thank you.